Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 175 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacka. Thanks for joining me again today on the show. We are going to have a conversation, an interview with Davin Charney from Charney Law in Toronto. Davin is a civil litigation and defense lawyer, and he's going to talk to us about searches and what your rights are around that. So that might come in handy for some of us gun owners out there. We're also going to talk about an exciting new contest that we're launching today at the CCFR, and it's unlike anything we've ever done. It's really interesting. I'm excited to tell you about that. And we've got an update on the Sampson & Associates thing in connection to the buyback confiscation program. Ms. Wilson has kind of been hard at that investigation. We've got a little bit more information to bring you and a very special memorial donation that we took in at the CCFR. I want to share that with you. All that and more, CCFR Radio starts right now. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR. With a wide selection of guns and top trending gear for any shooter, they have what you need. Plus, free shipping over $250, which includes ammo, or flat rate shipping of $17 under $250. Some conditions apply. Subscribe to their weekly newsletter to get first access to the hottest deals. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR Radio podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. All right, we are back. I'm super excited to tell you this story. So as I mentioned, we have this new contest slash fundraiser coming out. And what's exciting about this is there's a story behind this, and this is something unlike anything we've ever done, and I'm really excited to share the story. So I think the best way for me to launch this is to just read you just a few sentences of correspondence between Scott Carpenter of International Shooting Supplies in Surrey, British Columbia, and one of his customers, Gord Johnson. So this is Gord sending Scott an email regarding a conversation they just had. So it's the best way to kick this off. So Gord writes, "Hi, Scott. Thanks for speaking with me today. I'm sending you some information on the shotgun that was given to my father around 1950 from Herb and Frances Williams, my godparents. The shotgun belonged to their son, Willie the Kid Williams. He was one of the top Canadian aces of the Second World War, a fighter pilot. He died at age 20. He was Buzz Bierling's wingmate. Buzz was Canada's number one pilot. I would like the shotgun to go to someone who would appreciate the historical significance of the firearm. As the CCFR has a broad reach throughout the veteran community, I thought it would be appropriate to donate the shotgun to the CCFR as a fundraiser for Remembrance Day. Thank you, Gord Johnson." So, you know, I'm reading this. I'm like, what do I do with this? Right? I'm like, well, how do I just raffle off a shotgun with historical meaning, or how do we get something around this? So the first question I needed to ask myself was, well, who's Willie the Kid? I need to find that out first. So I did a little bit of research, and plus I reached out to Gord. He told me the story, sent me some material and whatnot. And it turns out Willie the Kid was from Chilliwack, British Columbia, which is where I'm speaking to you from right now. I lived in Chilliwack for 20 years here. So that was pretty cool. He was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross, which is one of Canada's most important aviation awards. He's one of Canada's better known World War II heroes, by the way. He had 10 confirmed German aircraft shot down in his brief career with the Canadian Royal Canadian Air Force. He actually died in a plane crash on his way back to Britain, is my understanding. So really, really interesting. So I was like, well, how do I, you know, what do I just, I didn't want to just give away the shotgun. Be like, well, here's what we think. And, you know, here's a copy of Gord's email for you, you know. I want it to be a little bit more special. So for the contest, the winner of the contest will win Willie the Kid's double barrel shotgun. It's a double barrel 12 gauge shotgun. I believe it's still functional, by the way. Could have a Damascus barrel in there because it's quite old. So be careful firing modern ammunition through something like that. But I don't know, maybe it's different. And what we did was we teamed up with Julianne's Art and Framing here in Chilliwack, who did a really great job of taking some historical documents of Willie the Kids that we sourced and brought together, including some documents that sort of show the chain of custody, right? And put them all in this beautiful frame, this commemorative frame, as you can see. And so we've got some of his service records in there. We've got a picture of Willie. We have an actual registration certificate from 2002 from Willie's parents that had, or Gord's dad, I can't remember who, but actually took ownership of that shotgun. And it's got some handwriting and stuff on there. So pretty cool. That's the original document in the frame as well, which is neat. And so you're going to get the shotgun and that commemorative frame. And that'll look really great in your man cave or wherever you want to display that. But a real living piece of Canadian history from a time so long ago, I don't think even people my age, right, I'm in my mid-50s, can really understand what it was like then. So I don't know. You know, might be big with veterans out there or historians. I don't know if it's got broad appeal to all of you guys, but I thought the story was just incredible, really compelling. And I just want to thank Gord Johnson and his family for donating this. It's such a unique prize and such a unique contest. Anyway, I wanted to have this done so that we could draw on Remembrance Day, but I just couldn't get it done fast enough. That's why I gave Julianne's Art and Framing in Chilliwack, British Columbia, a shout out, because they put this frame together really, really quickly for us because we had the app. We had a whole bunch of things. I was way behind, but anyway, here's the details for the contest. If you donate $10 to the CCFR, you'll get one free entry into the contest. If you donate $25, you get three free entries into the contest. The contest is open right now. So you can go there and do that. You can do that through the website, ccfr.ca or firearmrights.ca. And the contest ends midnight on November 17th. I want to get it by the 11th, but it wasn't enough time. So November 17th, contest is over. The following podcast and television show on WOW TV, we will be announcing the winner. So the podcast comes a week earlier than the TV show. So stay tuned to the podcast for that. Pretty cool. Pretty cool contest. Anyway, I want to move on to a memorial donation that was made. So when I was at TACCOM in Mississauga, Ontario, a little while back, Ian Roswell from the Campbellford Pistol Club had come by the booth and said, we want to make a donation of $700 to the CCFR in memory of some people associated with our club. And I'm like, that's unbelievable. Okay. So Ian sent me the details. So basically the Campbellford Pistol Club and individual members Alan Roy or Alan Waugh. I don't know if Alan is French, but I'm covering both my bases just in case. And Ian Roswell are making this donation in memory of Carl and Ann Klein, who are, I guess, founding members of the club, and also Daniel Pinkerton, who is a member and a gunsmith at Accuracy Plus in Peterborough. So a memorial donation of $700. So I just wanted to make mention of that because I think it's important. I'm always humbled at the, not only just the support from the firearms community and from Canadian gun owners in general for the CCFR, but just the way that people donate things like a piece of World War II history, a family heirloom to the CCFR, or a memorial donation. You know, I have a hard time thinking that we're even worthy of that kind of support and the meaning behind that, I guess. So I'm just really humbled when people do things like that for the CCFR. And that's one of the things that, and my own, you know, drive to keep my guns, right, is just what drives me every day to continue to fight these these terrible people that we fight and to keep up the level of activity, the level of work that we do at our little organization. And I mean, that's the kind of stuff that really drives me personally. So anyway, really meaningful. Okay. So we're going to move on to our interview with Davin Charney and find out what your rights are when it comes to searches right after this.
Download the CCFR mobile app right now. Keep up with what's going on in the community, watch the CCFR podcast, and get exclusive discounts from dozens of gun stores and other CCFR business members. Download it right now from Google Play, the Apple App Store, or the cancel-proof progressive web app. The CCFR mobile app, free to download right now.
All right, we are back and we've got a special guest via Skype. It is Davin Charney from Charney Law in Toronto, Ontario. How are you, Davin?
Very good. Thank you for having me on your show. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I'm glad you're here. So you're a civil litigation lawyer that does a little bit of defense work in Toronto, as I mentioned. And there are some things that you're doing to help licensed gun owners navigate the law. Can you just maybe start out by telling us kind of the kinds of services that you can offer licensed gun owners?
Sure. So yeah, I'm a lawyer. I'm a gun owner myself, and I've grown my practice to help other gun owners dealing with firearm seizures, issues with their licenses, either revocations or they can't get a license, different offenses, including criminal offenses such as unsafe storage or transportation. I've helped people with peace bonds. So a variety of different circumstances.
Yeah, that's really useful stuff because with the way that our system is, you can have there's a lot of opportunity for licensed gunners to run afoul of the law in a number of different circumstances. So that's useful. Now, today you are coming on to talk a little bit about searches because we do get calls from people saying, hey, the police showed up at my door for whatever reason. I didn't know what to do. I let them in. Now I'm facing a storage charge or something like that. How do you handle a situation where the police may come to your door, and under what circumstances may they show up?
So there's a variety of different circumstances that police may show up. I'll start with that. And it might not be that they suspect you of a criminal offense. It could be that you're the victim of a criminal offense, like a break and enter. And if someone's stolen your firearms, the police are going to start asking questions about how they were stored. Your residence could be damaged by a fire or a flood or something that required attendance of emergency personnel, which might include the police. So it's not just that people that are suspected of crimes, that get visits by the police. It could be other people in various situations. Now, how to deal with that? Obviously, that depends on the scenario, but there's some, I think, important things to remember, and I'll just mention a few of them. Firstly, remember when you're dealing with the police that they're human. They can be angry. They can get upset, just like anyone else. And also, because the law around firearms is complicated, they may not know the law, and the law sometimes is unclear. So when the police are at your door, the most important thing to ask them about is, do they have a warrant? And if they don't have a warrant, you're within your rights, in most circumstances, to ask them to come back with a warrant. There are some circumstances where they can search without a warrant, what the lawyers will call exigent circumstances, such as hot pursuit, or if there's an ongoing an offense within the residence, like a fight or something like that. But aside from those circumstances, almost always the police will require a warrant. So you want to ask them, do you have a warrant? You want to check the warrant, make sure it has the correct address. And if they do have a warrant, then you want to not interfere with their investigation because they may search the residence and leave and you don't get charged. But if you're interfering with them, then you could escalate the situation to where you do get charged with an offense like obstruct or assault police. You want to record. Make sure you're recording the events either through home surveillance or through use of your cell phone or have other people in your residence record. And you want to avoid escalating a situation. police officers are trained in what's called the first contact approach. It's a de-escalatory technique where they introduce themselves and they try to develop a rapport with the person for de-escalation. And I advise people to follow the same thing. You might introduce yourself. You don't want to give the police information that they can use against you, but you want to appear to be polite and reasonable so that the officers will then, it's hoped, will deal with you in the same situation, in the same way. You want to, generally speaking, exercise your right to remain silent. So don't offer police information. Remember, they are there to do an investigation, and things that you do say can be used against you. And it's very unlikely that you're going to be saying things that will help you in the long run, even though you may think that what you're saying is helpful. Don't try to convince the police of something or persuade them of something. It's better to exercise your right to remain silent. And you can ask questions. Why are you here? Do you have a warrant? So those are some of the ways, I think, to deal with police. You know, the most important thing is to be reasonable, polite, but assertive. Ask for a warrant and never, ever, ever consent to a search. The best way to do that is to not open the door.
Yeah, you can talk to them through the glass, correct?
That's right.
Okay. So basically, in summary, and it's just, you know, so you don't run afoul of the law by accident. It's not that we're, you know, giving you advice to obey the law, but you don't need to answer any questions. You don't want to consent consent to any searches. If they have a warrant, then make sure that's the right address, the right date, and then don't interfere, and you can record them.
That's right. If the police are asking for your consent, chances are they don't have lawful authority to conduct a search. Otherwise, they wouldn't be asking for your consent.
Right. So, and again, I just want to stress, it's that you can, the Firearms Act is so nebulous in many ways and contradictory and all the rest of that stuff that you can run afoul even for small things of the law. But anyway, okay, we're out of time. Hopefully you'll come back. We got lots more to cover, transportation, vehicle searches, all kinds of stuff. But where can people find you if they need your help?
Yeah, my website is charneylaw.ca. They can just Google my name, Davin Charney. And I welcome people to be in touch with me. I'll do a free consultation for anyone that's seen this show. And I can send people information that I have, and I can send them a fridge magnet or a magnet for your safe, so you can keep it there at all times should they have any issue with the law.
That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, Davin, and we'll see you again soon.
Okay, hope so. Thank you.
All right, we're back, and via Skype, we've got Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson!
Whoa, that was a good one.
Yeah. Well, it's Thanksgiving, actually the stat holiday today, and I'm in the office, and there's nobody in the building, so I can do whatever I want here.
Oh, I see. So you're getting rowdy over there.
No, it's going to be a party, a big rowdy house wrecker, but it's just me. Yeah.
Hey, did you already talk about Willie the Kid?
I did.
Oh, I wanted to do that with you. I got to tell you, when we were talking about it over the phone, I had you on speakerphone, and Colin walked by, as you know, he's a veteran, and he was like, wait, what? Willie the Kid? And he knew all about this guy, knew the history of him. And for me, it's a little bit personal. As you know, my dad served in the Air Force for almost 30 years, and this is the 100th anniversary of the RCAF. So I don't know. I think this couldn't be more timely, more perfect of a contest. Colin was jumping up and down. Too bad he can't win. But yeah, anyways, I think it's super cool, and I'm very excited about it.
Well, that's cool. I mean, honestly, I didn't know who Willie the Kid was. I'm not a historian, a Canadian military historian or anything, but it was interesting, this whole experience. I think I might've mentioned it already, but it was interesting that he's from Chilliwack. You know, I'm from Chilliwack, and that's in British Columbia. I know it's a weird name. And people probably, when they hear Chilliwack, they think of the old Canadian band. But the CCFR studio where I am right now is in Chilliwack, British Columbia too. So,
that's right.
But yeah, I had no idea either.
Yeah, no, it's very, very cool contest. I'm super excited about it. And I bet somebody out there is just dying to get their hands on that. Yeah, so it's pretty, very cool.
It's pretty neat. A really unique donation too. So
absolutely.
All right. So we've got things to get covered here. So let's get started. First thing we're going to talk about is we have a little bit of an update to the Sampson and Associates deep undercover investigative report that you did in the last podcast.
Yeah, that's right. So if you missed it on the last show, we talked about my little field trip. And what this was within an response to an order paper question by Senator Plett, we learned that a local consulting firm, Sampson & Associates, has received over $9 million from the federal government in regards to something to do with the buyback confiscation program. So they listed their office addresses on their website. I went on a little tour. Since then, I've actually had some communication with one of the executives. He saw my tweets on Twitter about it, which is in my pinned tweet, so you can go and check it out there. He's disputing the numbers represented by the government in that order paper question. However, a couple of Twitter sleuths who go through the very public information that is records on consulting, you know, government contracts that get paid out. They've actually been consulting with the government since 2004, so during Harper years as well. Some pretty modest amounts the first little while, $1.2 million, $1.8 million. In 2015, that jumped up over $10 million. And in 2020, they received $36 million. So in 20 years of consulting with the federal government, they've received $221.6 million. Now, they've invited me to schedule an appointment with them, come back to the office. I'm not convinced I'm gonna do that a second time, but I know that Senator Plett has filed a couple more order paper questions, so we'll see what else we can dig up.
Well, that's a little weird, but I mean, you know, when we do these things, the whole point isn't to act like the liberals do and just, you know, and be political and just smear someone for the sake of smearing them. So when you show up unannounced at offices, yeah, a lot of people work from home now, and I think COVID. Yeah. Showed a lot of companies that that's possible in right. certain businesses. So yeah, it's entirely reasonable that maybe people weren't in the office at the time when you showed up unannounced. But for me, it is still a problem that it's like, well, no, we never got this. We never took in this level of money, yet that came from the government that they did. And then yes. You're portraying that as like, oh, we're not that big of a contract. Then it's like, oh, well, you've taken in almost $250 million in 10 years. Not that it was all from liberals, but it skyrocketed under the liberals. So it's like, that's a little weird too. But I think the one thing that I think is strange is that if you're taking in $250 million in revenue, like think about that. If you own a small business like ours, like think about that kind of revenue, right? Like this is serious, yeah. serious money. This is like fantasy level money. Right. Wouldn't you have a P.O. box or wouldn't your mail be going to your head office instead of some guy's house that worked once upon a time for the company? Like, wouldn't you have we have a P.O. box. So that's just,
yeah,
that's just weird to me that like those are business decisions, right? Yeah. Because people can go on the website and go, whoa, where are all your office locations? Just like you did. And then you go there and there's the guy in his pajamas and goes, oh, they send mail here. Like what?
Yeah, he fully admitted that they just use the address for mails. So yeah. I don't know why they wouldn't just use a P.O. box or just use their office 12 minutes away in Gatineau. I don't know. I mean, for $221.6 million over the last 20 years, you think they could spring for a P.O. box. But anyways, yeah, I don't.
Just weird.
I
don't, weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. But we'll keep you guys updated as new information comes to light.
Yeah, I'm sure this is not the end of it.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to move on to some rather negative, bad news. Our great friend J.R. Cox over at the Shooting Edge in Calgary has had to close his doors.
Yeah, that's right. So in a Facebook post, J.R. attributed it mostly to the rising cost of the rent in the location that he was in. He had been there for a very long time and the cost was just out of control. And also declining sales. And mostly that would be due to the Liberals banning this gun and that gun and banning everything else. Of course, when you have a lot less available to you to sell, you're going to have declining revenues. So when you combine declining revenues with rising costs, it's bad news for business. So Another One Bites the Dust. And it's personally very sad because I know JR has been a great resource to not just the CCFR, but also to the women's program, a great help to our volunteers, a place I did many interviews and went axe throwing and met Mike there a couple of times. And yeah, it was just a real hub of a busy spot, really cool spot with a store and ranges and classrooms and cooking classes and axe throwing and a restaurant. And yeah, it was a cool spot. I'm going to really miss it.
Yeah, it was a really cool business. And, you know, it's extra sad because I will tell you, JR has been so good to the CCFR. He has been there for so many things that we needed, you know, like he's really given to the community a lot. So unfortunately that's happened, but he's still got Target Sports in Ontario still doing great. That's my understanding. So he's down, but not out, but maybe a little while from now when the Liberals are gone and we can get Canada working again. You never know. Maybe they'll be back. But in the interim, you still got the Calgary Shooting Center and some other great businesses out there. So, you know, we're down, but we're not out.
That's right. That's right.
Awesome. Okay. Next up, we have the Alberta Bill of Rights. So at the CCFR, obviously, we're the gun lobby in Canada. We're focused on things like the Alberta Firearms Act and things like that, and a lot more looking at the federal situation because firearms are a federal jurisdiction. But Alberta's got this new Bill of Rights, and it's mentioned, firearms are mentioned in it.
Yeah, that's right. This is actually an old bill. It dates back to 1972 under Peter Lougheed. And the original intention of it was very clear, and it was to shield citizens from government abuse of power. So it contains a lot of stuff like right to individual liberty, security of the person, enjoyment of your property, right to equity before the law, right to freedom of religion, speech, assembly, all that good stuff. So what's going on here is Danielle Smith is amending that Bill of Rights to include three main new pieces. And that's the right to make one's own choice over vaccinations or medical decisions, right to not be deprived of property without due legal recourse and compensation, and most importantly, the right to legally acquire, keep, and safely use firearms in Alberta. So a lot of people are saying this might not have any teeth, it's largely symbolic, and it's true that the Alberta Bill of Rights wouldn't have authority or the jurisdiction to dictate how federal parliament can lawfully restrict firearms. But I think it provides a really nice setup for a future friendly government to work with the provinces to protect the rights of Alberta licensed gun owners. So yeah, really interesting. The bill will be tabled later for debate later this month in the legislature in Alberta. But at the same time, November 2nd, Danielle Smith faces a leadership review at the UCP convention in Red Deer. So there's a lot going on there, but it's pretty vital that these amendments to the Alberta Bill of Rights pass. So,
yeah. Well, and you know, it's funny. And obviously, we're immersed in politics all the time, a little bit more federal than provincial. But, you know, there's almost a little bit of a mutiny going on within the UPC against Danielle Smith. And, you know, I've followed Danielle Smith for a while, right? I was on her show a few times back when she was on the radio, and certainly she has a lot of history in the political system in Alberta. And I think that some people are probably like, you know, things aren't happening as fast as they'd like them to happen. But I'll tell you, I don't remember anybody else ever sticking their neck out politically that far and actually getting some of these things done. I don't remember. And, you know, not to start drag anybody through the mud, but I don't remember Jason Kenney doing that either. So, you know, I don't know, when you start fooling around, and we're learning this in British Columbia too, I'll probably talk a little bit about that in the outro. When you start fooling around too much and expecting too much too fast from a huge bloated bureaucracy, sometimes you can bite your nose off despite your face. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm no expert in Alberta politics, so I don't want to portray myself like that. But, you know, really think about all the alternatives before you do things like that, because certainly to gun owners, Alberta and Saskatchewan actually have done more for gun owners than any other province, probably all of the provinces combined. So absolutely, if you're a gun owner, you should be pretty happy with what's going on there. They're pulling out the stops and doing everything they possibly can to protect you from an overreaching federal government. And the other thing I just want to add is that when like the regulation of firearms and the criminal code are a federal jurisdiction, but municipalities, provincial policies and municipalities, municipalities in particular are a creature of the provincial government. So what an Alberta Bill of Rights would do, and I'm just speculating, if there's any provincial constitutional lawyers out there, you can feel free to correct me because I'm not an expert in these matters. But I would imagine that even though an Alberta Bill of Rights that mentions firearms and the, you know, the right to acquire and legally use firearms may not protect you from a federal buyback by itself, it does make sure that the provincial government doesn't do anything to offend those provisions and municipal governments as well. So, you know, we have three levels of government in Canada, and that takes care of two of them that won't be able to do certain things, right? So anyway, I guess all that to say, they're still doing a lot more than any other province, maybe save Saskatchewan, for individual rights. And I certainly am appreciative of that, even though I'm not a resident of Alberta.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly the thing. Sometimes when you take an all or nothing approach, you end up with nothing. So, you know, I think the alternative to a UCP government is devastating. And, you know, I worry about the future of the party under different leadership. So Danielle Smith has that really solid ability to take a position and defend it. And that's incredibly important and avoids flip-flops. So,
Yeah. So anyway, whatever. If you're a resident of Alberta, you decide. But anyway, just a couple of things to think about. Okay, we're going to move on to Field Officer of the Month. So as you guys out there may know, the field officers at the CCFR are volunteer corps. And every month we honor one of our volunteers for going above and beyond, helping the CCFR doing all the things that we could never do with staff, which is a pile of work. So this month's FO of the month is Raymond Davis. So congratulations, Raymond.
Yeah, he's a Manitoba field officer, and I actually had the honor to meet him recently at Wolverine Days. So congratulations to Raymond, and thank you for all you do.
That's well said, Ms. Wilson. So just in case anyone forgets, what you get for being Field Officer of the Month is a year's free subscription to Canadian Access to Firearms, graciously monthly donated to us by our great friend Donovan Dewis over at CATF. You also get a $100 promo code. You're big on promo codes, right, Ms. Wilson?
I love them.
Yeah, yeah. You're always throwing out some codes here and there. But I actually like bringing that. Making light of that every single time I use the word promo code. But you get a $100 promo code to get yourself some new swag from the CCFR store, and you get honored with a picture in CATF too. Donovan's been doing that recently by his own accord. He never even said that he was going to do that to us. So it's just, I always like to give Donovan a shout out because, again, somebody that specifically is doing so much for the CCFR. We don't even ask him and he does stuff for us. It's really great.
Yes. Absolutely awesome.
All right. Well, I think we've covered everything for now.
Okay, that's it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the update, and we'll see you next time.
Okay, we'll see you then.
Things that are really important that I have to go over with you before I let you go. And this one is going to be very uncomfortable. So fasten your seatbelts. Hopefully you'll understand what I'm trying to tell you in this. Okay, it's going to get interesting. So it has to do with the fact that there's a provincial election coming up here in British Columbia on October the 19th. Now, I got this email from a CCFR member. I didn't check if he's a member. I'm taking him at his word. And it's like, I don't know, eight paragraphs or something. It's very, very long. And so I skimmed it and I'm like, oh yeah, I think this is something we need to talk about. So this gentleman says that he was a CCFR member for a long time, but because I've been personally railing against the provincial NDP that are running to maintain their government in British Columbia here, that he can no longer support the CCFR because I, by extension, the CCFR is being partisan. He's obviously an NDP voter, which is probably a difficult place to be, being an NDP supporter and a gun owner that believes that guns are important. Just like I think it's probably really difficult for people that vote Liberal and own guns. Like, I don't envy you being in that position. But he's like, you know, you're being partisan and that's not cool. Right? And I get that. And you know what? I agree with him. So that's why I want to come on and talk about this. So let me put it to you this way. Back when we started the CCFR in, we took our first membership, I think it was October 28th, 2015. So about 8 years ago, right? And is it 8 or 9 years ago? As an organization, we're getting old. Can't even remember, right? So back then we said, hey, the CCFR is a nonpartisan organization. And that's exactly what we intended to do. And that's what we were, I think, for about 3 years, honestly, I think, somewhere around 3 years. And the reason we were able to do that is because at the time, because remember, a month later, the Liberals won a clear majority government. And we're like, that's okay. We'll work with the Liberals and we'll work with Conservatives. And the NDP are floating around there. And maybe we'll have a meeting with the Bloc. I don't know. Get around, right? But our whole mandate was to make sure that legal firearm ownership was a recognized aspect of the Canadian social fabric, which it is, and that we worked towards getting laws repealed that were just punitive against licensed gun owners for no reason, and be proponents of gun laws that would increase public safety, right? Which, of course, anything that increases public safety is good for gun owners, you know, whatever. But and it's funny because, and the evidence of that, let me just tell you this, sorry for getting sidetracked, but if I would have looked at my social media activity as it is today, when back in 2015, as the new, you know, whatever president at the time of the CCFR, I would have fired me. I would have been like, whoa, dude, that is way off base. And the reason is because we were nonpartisan. But what ended up happening is a new reality came to Canada. We had never had an extremist, like literal radical extremist government like we had with the Liberals when they got in. And it was, we had never seen a divisive government like this. They were dividing people based on their sexual preferences, on their economic status, on their social status, on their political views, on their ideas of bodily autonomy, whether or not, you know, I control what goes into my body, like just censorship and attacks on private property. And it just went on in the language. Right? Anyone that disagrees with me is this, 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 and this. So I don't care about addressing the point. Here's all the reasons that person is terrible. Thus, you must discount, you must ignore all of their arguments altogether. I win. It's 2015 because it's 2015, right? We'd never seen that before. And so it became very, very early on, I'd say, honestly, I think it was about 3 years. 3 years in, we're like, okay, the only solution or problem here, especially when the gun ban came, the May 1st, 2020 gun ban, the only solution right now on the table to stop this is a political solution. What is a political solution? It's a partisan solution. And today, it's more important than ever. The only way for me to fulfill my promise to you in return for your support is to catapult the Liberals, the federal Liberals, the NDP, and the Bloc as far away from power as we possibly can and elect a supermajority conservative government that has promised not to give us machine guns, just promised that they would be reasonable with us and to help them and to hold them to their promises too. Because if you're not actually going to do those things, why am I allied with you anyway? Screw it. Right? Like that's, and I'm giving you a little insight from me personally. That's where I'm at. If you're just going to tell me these things because I don't have an alternative, screw it. You know what? Let the chips fall where they may, because this has been a rough ride, right? For the last 8 years, it's been pretty tough. So anyway, when it comes to the provincial election, so yes, we are. So are we a partisan organization now? Absolutely, we are, because that's the only way we can do what we promised to do, which is save your guns. Make it, and even for me personally, right, to make it so that I can pass my guns down to my kids, which is really important to me, and that my kids have the ability to legally own and use firearms because it's an important aspect of a free society. I truly believe it, and that's what I'm after. And that's what needs to be done to do that. So when it comes to the provincial election, The provincial NDP have run a campaign unlike anything I've ever seen. I've never seen this level of blatant disinformation and in your face lying and pure deception. Like, I know I'm being a little bit hyperbolic, but I'm really not. If you just look at what they've done, it's almost psychological warfare level stuff where they're like, John Rustad, who's the leader of the Conservative Party of BC, wants gang members to have access to assault weapons and for police not to be able to seize them. Like, who could even conjure up that level of propaganda? It's nauseating, right? So anyway, that's how they're campaigning, trying to hold on power in British Columbia. I'm in British Columbia and I'm a two-time cancer survivor so far. I've been in and out of the medical system for 7 years. I've watched it collapse. Like, it is worse than you think. Some people have a different experience, but go to the emergency room in Abbotsford, British Columbia, even during the day on a weekday, and see how long it takes you to get in there, even if you're hemorrhaging, life-threatening hemorrhage. Like, go try it. Go try it in a lot of urban centers in Canada, much less British Columbia. There's rolling emergency room closures. There's no emergency room like in Merritt, British Columbia, or in Kelowna. Like, no emergency room. And of course, no doctor's office. Like, what happens if you get in a car accident? Right? Maybe the ambulance will drive you to the next city. I don't know. Right? We've seen this opioid, just this total apocalypse of opioid and these downtown centers, like the Lower East, downtown East Side, like, oh man, like, it's zombie apocalypse. And the economy and deficits and all this stuff, and combine that with their campaign, I cannot support them. And I cannot stand there and watch this happen, watch them get power again. They probably will, but I'm not going to be a party of it. But then here's what dragged me in there as the CCFR. When David Eby said that he was going to, and if need be, pay for, and I'm paraphrasing, right, just to be honest, that he's going to be in lockstep with the federal government, even with the buyback. And if the federal government wants British Columbians to pay for it, right, the province to pick up the tab and provide the resources, taking police off the streets so they can't respond to 911 calls to go sit at buyback centers, then that's what he would do. And he wouldn't cater to a, this is a direct quote, small and insignificant, you know, segment demographic, which is gun owners. By the way, there's 340,000 licensed gun owners in BC. Not exactly a fringe group, by the way. But that's where so for me, I'm looking at that and I'm like, that these people need to be stopped. We're not getting the benefit that they're getting in Alberta or in Saskatchewan with a provincial government that says, that's wrong. At least we're not going to pay for it. And you know what? The BC Conservative Party, Conservative Party of British Columbia, I should say, right? John Rustat, he didn't even say he would block the buyback. He just said, the feds, they can fill their boots, they can come and do it, but I'm not helping them and I'm not taking police off the street to do it. Right? So are we against the provincial NDP in British Columbia? Yeah, we are. Why? Because I made a promise I would do everything I possibly could as running an organization and as a human being myself, as just a person, to stop anyone from taking your guns away and to protect your legal ability to own and use firearms. That's what we're doing. So are we going to lose a few people maybe that are NDP supporters? Maybe. I'm hoping that you'll understand that I can't put a catching glove on both hands and play both teams in a baseball game. I have to wear one glove at a time. Does that make sense? Probably a crappy analogy, but that's just the reality of it. I just can't. It's not possible. For me to save your guns, I have to pick a side. As an organization, we have to pick a side and we have to get people out of power that just want to take your things and hurt you. So, you know, am I sorry to lose a member? Absolutely. Is there anything I can do about it? I just don't think that I can. So anyway, I wanted to address that. It was 10 minutes. So I'm sorry it was long, but it's an important conversation because sometimes people do get mad at us, you know, like, I'm a liberal voter and I'm a gun owner. And, you know, I don't like it that you guys beat up on liberals. Like, that's the only way for me to save your guns. I need the liberals to be defeated horribly in the next election. I don't know. Is that my conflict or the members' conflict? I don't know, but we can always use your help. And I'm sorry if that's that, you know, just kind of exposes a conflict in your life. It's got to be tough. Anyway, all right. So I want to get that out of the way. Now, don't forget the Willie the Kid contest. Really cool. Willie the Kid contest. It's on. It's open right now. So if you go to firearmrights.ca, you can enter. A $10 donation gets you one entry into the contest. $25 gets you three entries into the contest. Make sure you read all the contest rules before you enter. There are actually some details in there, so make sure you read it. And the contest ends November the 17th. So the next podcast and the next television show after the 17th, we will tell you who the winner is. And don't forget, download the CCFR mobile app from the Google Play Store or the Apple Store and get special deals from our business members. Keep up with what's going on at the CCFR. Get the odd notification if you're interested. Watch or listen to the podcast. Manage your membership with the CCFR. All kinds of great things. We spent a lot of time and effort on this app, and it's awesome. And don't forget to vote October the 19th. Don't forget. Super important in British Columbia. So if you live in British Columbia, get every voting age person that you know. Drive them yourself to the polls and vote, right? On one hand, you have a party that says, hey, whatever the feds come up with to attack licensed gun owners, we'll even pay for it. They're looking at a $24 billion deficit, and they're like, yeah, we'll even pay for it. And then the other side, maybe not somebody that's going to protect your guns, but says, hey, the feds, if they want to do that and it's within their jurisdiction, they can do it themselves. We're not allocating police resources to taking guns from licensed gun owners. Those are really the two choices there. So anyway, don't forget to vote. Super important. Take care, everybody. I know it was long. I really appreciate it. Take care, and we'll see you on the next one.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.